Jim, how about you lead this in serenity prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Gentlemen, time's running out on us. And I've said a lot of things, and I don't think I've said anything. So tonight, this morning, I'm afraid we're in for trouble. I'm taking my gloves off. God grant me the serenity to accept things I can't change. One of the things that I can't change is yesterday. There is nothing that I can do to change one thought or act of yesterday. The combined intelligence of the human race can't change nothing about yesterday. Yesterday's gone. Now, anyone who chooses to carry yesterday's mistakes with him, the burdens of yesterday, is going to break. You can't carry the damn stuff. To be able to see that you can do nothing about yesterday, it's gone. You can't even rectify a mistake or a thought. I was yakking in Fresno some years back. And after the meeting, we went out to a kid's house. He was from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, incidentally. I can't remember his name. And he was much younger than I, and he had a wife and three or four kids. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, we were out in the kitchen. And he says, Chuck, he says, every so often I've got to get drunk. He says, I get to thinking what I've done to my wife and these kids, and I can't stand it. And I got to get drunk. And I says, don't blame you. If I got to thinking about what I've done to my wife and my kids, I'd be drunk before I get to Bakersfield. Now, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and you think there's no liquor stores open, don't you? But there would be when I went down that road. Because I'd drive this hack right straight through the front of them. And I'd get me some liquor. If I got to thinking and dwelling on what I've done to my wife and my kids and my mother and others, I'd be drunk before I get to Bakersfield. I don't think about it. There's nothing I can do about it. The only thing I can do for my wife and my kids is to add a little something to their life today, if I can. But yesterday is gone. That's one of the things I cannot change, and I accept it completely and wholly. I can do nothing about it, so I'm not going to carry its burdens. What about tomorrow? It's not mine. It's not mine. It's God's. I might not even be here tomorrow. So I'm not going to carry the fears and uncertainties of tomorrow. It's not even mine. And that leaves only today. The only thing I got is today, now. So what I'm going to do is today, I'm going to live to the best of my ability this day according to my program. I've got a program. Because I'm an alcoholic. And I got a program. And it's simple. And I know what the words say. And I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. And that's all I'm going to do, because that's all I can do. And I'm going to let the chips fall where they may. If it's not good enough, I got to die. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, the courage to change the things I can, Well, I can change me, and that's the only thing I can change. I spent a lot of time trying to change the world. And you... my wife and my kids. But I can't change them. There's nothing I can do about it. But I can change me. I can change my attitudes and my action patterns. And I can get comfortable with me today. And that's all I can do. And that's what I'm going to do. The wisdom to know the difference. Well, this is the package. Now, what was my problem? What was my problem? A liquor bottle? Yeah. Liquor bottle never was my problem. In that whole last 10 years that I drank, the 10 years of hell that I spent, I was sober more than I was drunk because I was periodic. Between every two drunks, I was physically as well as them right now. Between every two drunks, I was physically as well as them now. Why didn't I stay that way? I had a whole damn 25 years to look at, and there was nothing in it to recommend it. Why didn't I stay sober? I got drunk again. And I kept getting drunk again. And yet every time between two drunks, I was as sober as them right now, physically. What was my problem? Certainly wasn't a bottle when I'm sober as them right now. But I got drunk again. Why did the man say to me, "Chuck, I don't know when you're the most miserable. When you're drunk or when you're sober." He says, "I believe I'd take you drunk." So what was my problem? My problem is me. I wasn't comfortable. I was a misfit in this world. Now, I said last night when we were in there talking, if there be fault, it's mine. And again, without any attempt to rationalize, because I accept myself exactly as I am. I'm a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk. And I'm neither proud of it nor am I ashamed of it. That's the way it is with me, and I accept this fact. It's something I cannot change. I'm a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk. But I don't think I'm at fault in this thing. I don't think that I set out to bring this about. I don't think that I set out to isolate myself from everybody in life. I wanted to be a part of it. Even in my worst times, I wanted to be a part of life, and I'd go down to a goddamn bar because the jukebox was playing and people were laughing. And there were some bright lights. But what did I do? I sat down at the end of the bar by myself. And if somebody came alongside me and started trying to tell me, I was just liable not to hit him right in the nose. and I'd gone down there for companionship. I didn't set out to do this to myself. What was the matter? Well, I'll tell you what I think it was, what I think the problem is, and what I think the answer is. Simply as I know how. And it's only in looking back over this entire life of mine that these things become clear to me. I was a misfit in life from the day I was born. And so the thing that made me a misfit must have come with me. I can remember well at four. And my insides have always told me that life was a big and beautiful and a good thing. I was born with this thing. Life is good and big and beautiful. I didn't have anything to do with this. My insides had it. I came with it. I was born a perfectionist, and I didn't have a damn thing to do with it. Nothing. An idealist and a perfectionist. I came that way. When I was a little old knot-headed kid, I wore hand-me-down clothes because I had a brother that's 3.5 years older than I was. And I can remember when I was that high, wearing a pair of overalls with patches on patches and a celluloid collar, a stiff celluloid collar. And I was concerned about what to do with my hands. As a little kid, damn perfectionist. I didn't have anything to do with it. It came with me. And I was born with an emotional setup that was out of this world. My dad was the best barn dance fiddler in our part of the country. I loved those fiddles and the guitars. I loved them. And we were all the time having musicals. And where was I? I was hid behind the stove, bawling my damned eyes out. As a little bitty old kid, this emotional setup of mine that came with me. I loved this thing, and I'd hide and cry so people couldn't see me bawling. Now, these things came with me. And when I got big enough, they began to cause me trouble. I was raised in the Methodist Church South when I was a little guy. The whole family was Baptist, hard-shell Baptist, Methodist Church South. We moved a good deal. My dad was a railroad man, and it depended on which one of them was tops in the little old town we'd get in, or which one of them was there. A lot of the towns were too little to have two, so whichever one was there, we'd be in it. And before I was even to the age of reason, my insides rejected what they told me. I didn't have anything to do with it. My insides wouldn't let me believe it. When they told me that God would take a baby away from you to punish you, you know, I could not believe this. I rejected it. I could not believe in hellfire and damnation where you burn forever and ever, world without end, amen, and nobody to put any water on your tongue. My insides wouldn't let me believe it. And I didn't fit. Oh, I tried to fit. I told you the first time I talked. This thing, I tried my damnedest to get saved and get in there and be a part of them. But I couldn't make it. And it wasn't my fault. And when I got out into the world, looking at this big, beautiful thing called life, and saw really what was going on, I couldn't accept society. I simply could not accept it. It wasn't according to my pattern. I didn't like it. People didn't act like I thought they ought to. And therefore, I could not fit in the society around me. And I got hurt. Everything in life hurt me. Because I was trying to do right. I was trying to do things the best I knew how. And I was getting slapped down. And it hurt. And from my earliest memory, I was building a fence around myself to try to keep from getting hurt. Now, this very combination, this idealism, perfectionism, beautiful picture, and this emotional setup forces me into self-thinking. There isn't any way I can get around it because I don't fit. And self-thinking is insanity. 98 8/10% I'm a psychiatrist now. I've just changed deals. See? Of all the people who are in mental institutions today are there because of self-thinking. There's only a very small percentage that are there because of brain damage. They're there because of self-thinking. And a lot of them go around thinking they're Napoleon, you know? But they're not, I am. Now, with this kind of setup, and with the inability to integrate myself into the life around me, to be a part of instead of apart from, with my inability to be a part of, I'm a cinch when I find alcohol. I'm a cinch. Because alcohol does something for me that nothing yet has ever done. It fixes me. So I'm temporarily all right with me, and you're temporarily all right with me. Because it takes the hurt out of this thing out here. And I can live in comfort when I'm right there, right where I belong. Now, liquor did that for all of us for a while, you know. It put us right where we belonged. It gave us the missing ingredient in life. Now, it don't do this for other people. Non-alcoholics don't get this. Because they don't need it. My good wife, God bless her, couldn't be an alcoholic if she worked at it from now till the time she died. She simply couldn't make it because alcohol don't do it for her. Sort of tickles me and makes me a little mad, too, because every once in a while we run down to Victor Hugo's, you know. dinner down there, and we'll be sitting here and table for two, and you'll be a table for six that sits down, and the waiter comes in and says, will you have a cocktail before dinner? And they take 10 minutes discussing to see whether or not they're going to have a cocktail. And they finally decide, yes, we'll have one. And then they take another 10 minutes deciding what it's going to be. And the guy goes and gets it and brings it back, and they're busy talking about last night's bridge game. And he sets them down, and they go stale before anybody picks one of them up. Then they pick them up and sip a little bit, and here's the food, and they leave them there. Hell, I could have had four doubles before they even decided whether they're going to have one or not. The hell they mess with it for? You see, because they don't need what I needed. They don't need that. But it filled a great need for me. For 15 years, it made it possible for me to live in this old world without hurting too bad. I could sort of stand it when I was three sheets to the wind. Well, after 15 years, the answer turned into the problem. Because it wouldn't put me where I had to be anymore. I couldn't get that place where I was right with me and the world was all right. I could almost make it, but I'd either go through or drop back. That spot I could never get in. And this was the great fight from the time this thing happened until the time I got to AA. The memory of those just right periods was a thing that kept us driving to get back there. We knew that there was a thing, you know, and we couldn't make it. And we kept fighting and eternally trying to get back there. And we couldn't make it. Well, fortunately for us, the disease of alcoholism is progressive. And the time came when we could no longer live without an answer. It was not possible for us to stay and drink. We had to have an answer. And we came to prison. Looking for what, God? No, I'd been looking for him for 35 years, but I was out of time with that. I wasn't looking for God. To get my wife back, no. She was gone, should be gone. I wasn't entitled to have her back. To get back the love of my kids, no. They were gone. To get my job back, no. It was gone. What was I looking for? Sobriety. I'd have settled for the meanest old unhappy sobriety on the face of the earth. Just as long as it didn't include that flick, I could no longer live. And they said, here are the steps we took. We're sober. And I did them for sobriety. And found the answer that I thought I'd found in the bottle. I no longer need that flip to put me in the place where I want to be. Where I'm right with myself and you. And work. Got it. The bottle never was my problem. I was my problem. And I wasn't at fault, in my opinion. I was not at fault. I was born this way. And this is the thing that I get sort of a bang out of. When we hear people talking about getting back to normal. What alcoholic can get back to normal? If we'd have been normal, we wouldn't have been alcoholics. We'd have been taking 10 minutes to decide whether we're going to have a drink or not. We can't settle for the normal. There's no chance in the world. We got a boy sitting right here that got normal, didn't need the program very well, very much now. He's got a little busy. Got bored with a few of the talks or something, and he didn't go. He's back now, thank God. You know? Why didn't he fit in that normal picture out there? He's sober. He had been sober for 18 months. He got normal and got drunk. Just as we could not accept the so-called norm in our youth, we cannot accept the so-called norm today. It don't answer our particular need. That's why I love this society of ours so much. I'm never as comfortable as I am with a gang just like this. I am never as comfortable. I am never as comfortable any place. And I don't get uncomfortable very often in any society now. But I'm never as comfortable and peaceful as I am when I'm with my own people. In AA. Now, let's get real simple on these steps. I don't know why it's so important to so many of us to think that all we need is not to have that bottle sitting in front of us. And we got her licked. I never had a drink until I was as big as him now. I had my entire youth and my school years when I was in athletics. No drinking, no smoking either. I was always in training. I didn't have the bottle sitting in front of me. But I was fighting life every inch of the way. Every inch of the way I was fighting. Now, what makes me think that somebody could just take this bottle, God will give him the bottle, and then everything's going to be all right with me? It wasn't all right before I got the bottle. So, we get rid of the bottle, and then we start working on alcoholism. Alcoholism. And we work on it for the rest of our lives. Got a program. We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. That our lives had become unmanageable. Now, how far are we admitting this? Are our lives only unmanageable when we're drunk? Are we going to read this step? We admitted that we were powerless over alcohol. That our lives had become unmanageable whilst drunk. They don't say that at all. It says we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable by us. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, is a guy only insane when he's drunk? What was the matter with me between drunks? I wasn't drunk. But the guy says, I think I'll take you drunk. Where does this insanity come in? Because there's no use to come to believe that you can get restored to sanity if you're sane. And if you're going to be sane the minute you got away from the bottle, what's a step in there for? We we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Well, something's got to restore us to sanity because we've already admitted that we're powerless over alcohol and that our lives are unmanageable. So something's got to intervene here for us. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And since we can't run our lives, since our lives are unmanageable by us, we make a decision to turn over the management. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now, how much of our lives are we turning over? Again, are we turning over the bottle? And then are we going to cut the meat? You know? Are we going to run the rest of these things? What's the matter with us? We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now, I deliberately leave out there as we understood it, because so many of our people think that means we got to understand the infinite. If it had meant we had to understand the infinite, I'd have died drunk, because I had great difficulty tying my shoes. When I got to this program, and I'm not kidding you a bit, this has no reference to understanding this, the infinite. This has reference only to the necessity of individual experience. Few monkeys want a project that'll get you drunk from now till you die. Try to find my God. Just get busy and find him. You haven't got any more chance than in a whirlwind. One of yours. There's nobody under heaven that can find my God but me. I spent 35 years trying to find your God. And I couldn't find it. So this has no reference to understanding the infinite. It has reference to the individual experience, the individual God, my God, and your God, albeit it's the same guy. But he's mine, and you couldn't have him. I wouldn't even give him to you if I could. He's mine. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Now, this thing means in all departments, in every facet of life. The carpenter put it like this. He says, you can't serve two masters. A house divided against itself can't stand. I can't run half of my life and let God run the other half. I'm either going to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, or I'm not. I'm either going to run my life and take the consequences, or I'm not going to run it and take the consequences. One or the other. You can't mix them. We've admitted that we've lost the battle. We've admitted we're nuts and need to be restored to sanity. And now we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. Our own. In all departments. Now, why is this so damn hard for us? Why? I don't want any more of the life that I used to have. I had it. I do not believe that I have one drunk left in me. I think I used up all of my chances. I'm inclined to believe that the thing that happened to me in bed happened in the act of death, like the preachers and the priests and the doctors say. And so I don't think I've got any more chances. And I don't want that life anymore. And I can't run my life. So I turn my will and my life over to God. Now, the next step says we took a fearless and thorough moral inventory of ourselves. I don't think this is so much of a production. In essence, we make it a great production. Jack White, production this thing from top to bottom, backwards, forwards, and through the middle. Hi, Jackson. And that's all right. I've got nothing against it. He got it done, by George. Over a period of time, huh, Jack? And it don't make any difference. But in essence, we're getting honest enough to look at ourselves and see the stuff that we ought to discard and get rid of, and see the stuff that we might have, that we could build upon. Many of you have heard this too. But when I took my first inventory, written inventory, believe it or not, the only thing I had in the asset column, because they told me we got a right to put some assets down, too. I think I have. The only thing I had on the plus side was that I was still warm. And I doubted very much if that was an asset, if you want my opinion. I was still breathing to get honest enough to look at ourselves. A fearless and thorough moral inventory of herself. And then to admit to God, to herself, and to another human being the exact nature of her wrongs. This is a catharsis. We get rid of this junk. This secret place. We get rid of secrets. And in the doing, get rid of the necessity to protect against. This is one of the greatest things that happens in the fourth and fifth step. We get rid of the necessity to protect this secret of our innermost being. And we get freed up. The confessional. One of the greatest things in Catholicism is the confessional. To unburden, to get rid of this stuff. Unfortunately, Doc, this is a laugh. I'm not too serious. Unfortunately, a guy like Doc, you know, he goes and gets rid of it and gets absolved. Absolution. So he can run out and do it again. But that's not the intent of it, is it, Doc? But to spread this thing out and let somebody else look at it with you. And then it's no secret anymore. And we get free of the necessity to protect ourselves. You see it? Terrific. And having gotten honest enough to look at it and to let somebody else see it, we're also then ready to get rid of it, to let it loose. And so we become willing to have God remove all of these defects against you, the whole bunch. Again, not just the bottle, the whole bunch. We become willing to give them away. And we give them away. We humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Now, where am I in this picture? Where is big, jolly old me? The guy that has run this show for 43 years, and the guy that's never been beaten in 43 years of life by anything or anybody up until now. Where am I? I'm nothing. I haven't got a right in the world. Nothing. I haven't even got the right, according to me, to take anybody's time. So I don't even have a sponsor. I haven't got the right. I'm an eavesdropper. Not a right owner. And I'm doing these things. Because the guy says to me, look at me. I'm a drunk just like you, and I don't have to drink anymore. And I look at him, and I know he's a drunk. He's marked up like I am, but he's not drunk. And I see his eyes. And I want some of that stuff. And I'm a nobody, and I'm doing these things. And I got no right. And then there's two more of them. And they say we made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Well, by the time we've got here, gentlemen, if we've done these other things, we want to do this. We want to make these amends. We plumb want to. And we put that down, and we start working on this. We make our amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so will injure them or others. Now, if a guy's been carrying on a little innocent platonic relationship with his... with his neighbor's wife, you know, it's quite probably prudent not to run over and tell him. But we make our amends where we can. And we would be willing to do it here if any good could be done out of it, but it don't do any good. And we don't do it where it don't do any good. Can do nothing but harm. We don't do that. But we do it where it can do good. And it's the most surprising thing in the world. I suspect nearly all of you heard Cliffy Walker go through this thing. And he really lays it on the line. And the amend steps are personally amongst the most valuable in the program. It's like an inside shower. And it's the most surprising thing in the world how much cooperation we'll get out of the world that we didn't think was worth a damn when we tell them, look, I'm an alcoholic, I'm not the big shot that I was posed as for these years. I'm an alcoholic and I've messed up. And I think I've found a way to live that I'm not going to have to drink anymore. And one of the things I'm supposed to do is to make amends, and that's what I'm here for. I've done you wrong. Not only do I apologize, but I'm telling you that I'll make restitution. Now, I'd like to look at this thing a minute, because we've got to be as honest as we know how. In my first 5 or 6 years in this program, my good wife and I got out probably between $7,000 and $10,000 amongst the brethren. All a guy needed to do was tell me his kids were hungry, and that his rent was overdue, you know. And I was good for a little hunk. And I laid it out thinking I was saving a bunch of, started to say skunks, but I meant drunk. And nothing happened, only that I contributed to their delinquency. Lost a lot of good friends that way, you know. And this is what we want to look at. How come we think that we can come into this program and get sober and then borrow money and not pay it back? What kind of thinking is this? There's a guy nearly all of you know. Spent a lot of time in the big house. Then he got out and he got sober. And he got active in the institutional committee. And he's done a tremendous institutional job up and down the state in prisons, telling the boys about his trouble and his victory. And he owes everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous that he can get any money out of. Now, what's the matter with us? A guy can't do that. I think he's going to have to go back to the prison. And he can tell them while he's there. At that time, he won't have to make the trip. Why do we think that now we're sober, we don't have to pay back a debt? It says in here, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And we come into this thing and think we don't have to pay our debts anymore. We're sober, aren't we? You know? How far does this thing go? Have I got rights now? I've been sober for 17 years. Have I got any rights? I haven't got a right in the world. I haven't got a right in the world. None. Do you owe me anything? No. You don't owe me nothing. You can get up and leave if you want to. You don't owe me a damn thing. Does A owe me anything? No. No. A don't owe me anything. I've made 4,000, maybe more than 4,000 talks all over the United States and Canada. Does A owe me anything? No. Don't owe me a damn thing. Does God owe me anything? Nothing. Nothing. Have I got any rights at home? I haven't got a right in the world. I haven't got a right any place. Nobody owes me nothing. I'm alive. I wouldn't have been alive if I hadn't been for drunk. Where's my rights? What's the matter with this? Does the world owe me 11? Do I deserve something? Because I've talked up she drunk? What's the matter with this? How far does this thing go? We're talking about life and death. For drunks, we're talking about insanity. Where they lock you up. And you only got enough left because your goddamn brain is wet now. And you only know enough to know why you're there and to feed yourself. And you got to live for the rest of your life. Like a vegetable. This is what we're talking about. Where's my rights? Can I afford to go sit in a bar and look at a couple of women and think, well, this would be great. I'll go get me one of these broads and have a little fun. I got some rights now. I'm sober. I'm paying the bills at home now for a little while. What the hell's the matter with us? We made continuous inventory. We looked at ourselves as we went along. Kept ourselves level by honestly seeing where we were getting off the beat. Where our motivation was getting fouled up. Where the old I am is sneaking back again. Where the rights, we get to thinking we have rights. Don't say, praying only for knowledge of his and my will for me. relying only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry it out. Now, these last seven steps in that, seven words in that step are most meaningful to me. Maybe you don't need the power, but I need it. Knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry it out. I had a lot of power. Walter Camp said the only way I could keep from being an All-American was to get hurt. So I got hurt. But I had the power. I lived by power for years and years and years. I couldn't even lift my head up. So I can use a little power. Praying only for knowledge of his will for me and the power to carry it out. Now this and thanksgiving and talking over everything, the good and the bad. I share everything in my life with my God. The bad just as the good. And immediately that it's shared, I discard it all. I don't even remember the so-called good things that I do. I think it's just as damaging for you and I as individuals to remember the so-called good as to remember the so-called bad. I share them with my Maker, my God, my partner in life, and discard them immediately. They go to wastebasket. I've gotten some of the most beautiful letters that anybody ever opened and read. From all over this world. And what to do with them? I read them and bawl my damn eyes out and throw them in the wastebasket. I can't afford to go back and read them again. I don't want to remember it. And when I was going through this little thing I told you about last night, it came Christmas. And we had the family down. And we had a nice Christmas dinner. Turkey we had. And I carved a turkey. Served everybody. Got up and left the table. Couldn't eat. My stomach was gone. The emotional upheaval had reacted in my body. So I got up and went in and sat down in my big chair. The doorbell rang. And in came a couple. And he said, "Chuck, we wonder if we can borrow a tape. We want a tape of yours. And we'll take it off. And we'll send it back." And I said, "Sure. Sit down." And they sat down. And the man says to me, "Do you remember 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when I came into your office? And you dropped what you were doing, took me across the street, and we sat down and drank coffee for 2.5 hours. And you told me these things." And I said, that's where this new life started. And his wife says, "And when he came home and told me you'd given him money, how I scraped to pay it back 5 years. Talked to a guy the other day. Been some 14, 15 years sober. And he He was still shaking when I was talking with him. He'd just come off of one. We were talking about this, and he says, I can do this every place but home. He says, I simply can't do it at home. I walk in, and we've got chicken and mashed potatoes and French bread. And I say, God damn it, don't you know I can't eat French bread with chicken? We've been married for 14 years. What are you trying to do? He says, I can't give up my rights at home. Now I let everybody else in the world make their mistakes. But my wife and my kids. And he was just coming off the drunk. After 14 years sober. Where are our rights, gentlemen? So we look at these things daily. And we see where we're getting off the beam. And we get down on our knees again. And we get right with ourselves. And with life. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with our own God. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. Now again, where are my rights? Where's my will come in? Praying for knowledge of His will for me. Where's my will come in? I own a business now. Got a little dough in the bank. Got a little authority around here. Where's my rights? You know? Dollars a time. We got it paid off. And I didn't remember him coming, and I didn't remember the fives. And this was the greatest Christmas present I got. It made me well. See, we do these things, and we forget them. We share them first and forget them. The good and the bad. And we don't carry this stuff with us. Either to build us or to destroy us. Because we don't need that anymore. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us. And the power to carry it out. And lastly, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And this is inevitable. This is inevitable if we do these things like we're talking about. And if we go all the way, including everything in life in the same package. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, then we try to carry this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We try to give this thing away. And we learn one of the biggest lessons in life. That it is in giving that we receive. Now we've heard this all our lives.
I've got it on a little thing in my pocketbook. I traded for it 17 years ago. I traded for this thing, the poem Invectus, which has been my code of life for my entire adult life. This had been my code, the poem Invectus. And it's the greatest drinking partner on earth. If you haven't got it and you want to do some more drinking, get this poem. It's a wonderful drinking partner. Out of the night that covered me black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods there be for my unconquerable soul. Let's have a drink, boy. Circumstance I have not winced or cried aloud. You see, we start crying the beer here, boy. This is a good one. You can't beat me. In the foul clutch of circumstance, I have not winced or cried aloud. Beneath the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody yet unbound. Isn't that terrific? What a drinking companion. Me against the whole world, but I'll win. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. What a drinking buddy this is. I traded that for the prayer of St. Francis 17 years ago, and I got a bargain. I got a big bargain. And the way we learn that it is in giving that we receive is by doing it. For the first time in our lives, we are willing to do something without a price tag on and without anybody knowing it. And we go and we try to carry this message to the alcoholic. And here is Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you're missing it, you're missing the greatest experience in life. This is a me sitting alone with a drunk in the dark room. This is a... It isn't the talk at the International Convention. It's sitting all alone with a drunk in the dark room, trying to tell you the story of a... This is a... It always will be. And in the very doing, our lives are filled. Infinitely more good has come into my life in 17 years than in the entire previous 40 years. And it all comes out of the same horn. Every bit of it. It's proof positive that it's in giving. For free and for fun. For no reason in the world. But just do it. Now you've heard the old cliche for the lifetime. Virtue is its own reward. You've heard that all your life. But there's one maybe you didn't hear. When virtue recognizes itself as virtue, it immediately becomes vice. Am I a big shot now? I've talked at 2 international conventions. This year I talk in 10 states besides California. Big shot. Big name.
I'm drunk. And I'm alive because a drunk had time. And if it ever becomes more important to me to talk at an international convention than to go next door at 2 o'clock in the morning, and hold the hand of a drunk, I'm in trouble. This is AA. And practice these principles in all of my affairs. And when I get honest enough and simple enough to carry this way of life into every activity of life, home, play, church, AA, business, any endeavor, every endeavor, I am made whole. I'm put back together again. Life is one, and there's no division in it. And nothing is more or less spiritual, and nothing is more or less important than another. It's all the same thing. It's nothing in the world but living to the best of my ability this day. Praying for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry it out. Thanking for the opportunity that today affords and moving it around. Action. Doing these things in all the activities of life. Going about my Father's business because I want to, for nothing, for free and for fun. Again, where are my rights? Where am I going? I'm not going no place. I have no rights. But the wonder of it is that we wake up and find that we're already there. We've come back home. And the table is spread, the banquet. Spread. And God Himself is our host. Bless you.